Yo, everybody, welcome to episode 25 of Techish. I'm Michael Behane, the co-founder of People of Color and Tech.com, and I'm joined with the amazing
Abadesi, founder of Hustle Crew. Ooh. I also work at Product Hub as a maker outreach.
Yeah, so it's a busy week. I think we should just get straight to this action.
Go, go, go.
Go, 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 go. And the first story that you put in the show notes was the first private astronaut / private citizens to go to deep space. So
deep
the dude's name is, I don't want to mangle this, Yusaku Maezawa. He's a Japanese billionaire, basically. He signed up with SpaceX to go on their brand new rocket for the year 2023 to go on a lapped track around the moon.
Yeah.
Is that the gist of it?
That's pretty much it.
And I look in the show notes, you wrote, why are humans obsessed with space? So I'm guessing Abba's not reading this. You know what? I'm going to even do your argument for you. You're going to basically say, there's so much problems on Earth. Why are we spending all this money on space? Is that what you're going to say?
Yeah. I'm obsessed with space. I'm not judging. It's not a statement of judgment.
Okay,
I know
cool.
Sometimes questions that start with why can often feel a bit judgmental.
Yeah.
But I honestly just wanted to ask you and ask the audience, you know, people in tech in particular are also really obsessed with space.
Yeah.
I think when we work in tech or when we're interested in technology, it's because we're interested in the future and tech is our gateway to that, right? Gateway is how we access it. But I guess what I meant in this case was like, of all the ways to spend your billions and billions and billions, you're going to jump in a jet.
And die. And well, possibly die.
Hopefully not, but potentially. And then what, loop the moon? I mean, I'm not saying I will turn down the opportunity. I would be like, yo, I don't want to be in the first batch
because
I feel
saying.
Like
this is
beta.
Yeah,
I feel like this is beta. You know what I mean? I want to be like in 3.0, 4.0. I'm not going to be an early adopter when it comes to privacy.
I want to go after Elon's mom. Once he puts his mother in there, yeah? And she comes back safely, I'll be like, yeah, let's go.
I'm going to clone myself first.
Yeah.
I'm going to put the clone in space.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was just wondering, why are humans obsessed with space? I was really just throwing it to the floor. Like, listeners, chime in. You're obsessed with space? Tell me why. Are you obsessed with space? Are you interested in space?
I'm not personally obsessed with space, but I think why people are obsessed with space is that we are in it, you know, a species that loves to explore. Like, we wouldn't have left, you know, East Africa if we hadn't, you know, been willing to do that.
Shout out Rift Valley.
Basically, I always make that joke humans. That my ancestors are the ones that were like, nah, we're chilling. Like, we're not going anywhere because I'm East Africa.
Stayed in Eritrea.
Because you don't know. Yeah, we stayed in Eritrea. Like, and everybody else is like, we'll go and see what's out there. But yeah, I think that's why. It's a natural inclination that we have to explore the world. And now we've kind of conquered the entire world. Now we're like, well, this is new. And this dude's obviously got enough money. And I think, like, he's a creative, he's a designer, he's an artist, he's a musician, he's an entrepreneur. So he's like, I need to do something that I haven't already done.
I thought it was interesting watching the stream. Did you watch the stream?
No, I didn't.
Elon Musk stood on stage and spoke about the journey that SpaceX has been on and how SpaceX almost didn't even really still exist. There were a lot of moments when it didn't.
Yeah, definitely.
Failed landings. It was an interesting presentation. I'm not going to lie, I didn't watch it all. It was also... like,
ain't nobody got time for that.
It was very long. But it is pretty incredible. I was a kid in America, obsessed with NASA, like everyone is, like sipping from the Kool-Aid, absorbing all the propaganda, and just thinking, wow, I want to be an astronaut. I want to explore the universe, go to all the new planets. And it's pretty incredible that within my lifetime, it is now happening and it's there. And I guess we just have to see what else is going to happen. I think it's also sad that the only people who are going to be able to do it are like the super rich. But, you know, I guess that's just capitalism.
I think it's also that the governments have just like defunded everything. I mean, we went to the moon in the 60s and we should be on Mars by now.
Well,
like,
I mean, America has bigger problems to solve than like becoming a multiplanetary country.
I mean, it had that problem even in the 60s. Like, there were still civil rights issues and whatnot.
Yeah, but
like,
it's about awareness, isn't it? And also, like, in that period of time, people were still like riding on the high of like the New Deal and like all the like macroeconomic changes that came around after the war. People were like, oh my God, we got so much money.
I think it was just the Cold War. I think they were like, the Soviets have put a man in space. Like, we best make sure that we're the first on the moon. And as soon as the Soviet Union collapsed, they were like, well, like, we have no reason. Yeah, there's no reason. There's
no
incentive.
Do you remember a few years ago, India was like, oh, we're going to send like a manned spacecraft.
Yeah, shout out to India. I don't know if they did it. Did they do it?
But, and then a lot of people were also like, why is India doing this?
Well, they still have a lot of poverty, essentially, right?
Yeah.
And there was a lot of talk in Britain, like, oh, why are we giving them like foreign aid? Like,
wanted to do something.
Right, yeah. But I think a lot of these programs, they lead to so much innovation. Whenever you try to do something that hasn't been done before, like if you could look at the list of inventions that NASA has spun off, it's endless, right? So I get why people are like, oh, why are we going to space? Like if we're going to Mars, for example, There's going to be so much new tech that's going to have to be built. That's going to improve all of our lives eventually. It's a massive investment in basically R&D and engineering and, you know, and a talent that it kind of creates and incentivizes. It's amazing. We're still living off the fruits of the 60s in that sense. And now we don't have that. We don't have anything to look forward to. I mean...
Come on. How can you say that?
I feel like...
There are kids listening, man.
Yeah, okay. I mean, there's never been a better time to be alive, blah, 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 blah. Like, you all know that shit. But essentially what Elon Musk is doing is going somewhere we've already been before. So what SpaceX is really good at is making space travel affordable. He's not going to Mars and do something that hasn't been done before. He's basically saying, we're going to go to the moon. We're not even going to land on the moon. We're just going to do a lap around the moon. And he makes it really affordable for companies to send their payloads to space because he's a really good engineer and whatever. And the private sector is really good at making things cheap and abundant. But what the private sector isn't really good at is doing things that haven't been done before. So going to Mars has to be the remit of NASA or any other governmental agencies. And I'm sad that no one's got the vision anymore. I feel like we think so smallly, not smallly, I'm sounding like Trump. We think so small these days. I think we think too small these days.
I really disagree with that. I disagree with that so strongly. Like, I actually could not disagree with that anymore.
Go on.
I 100% agree that innovation, historically, particularly in the 20th century, huge, waves of innovation came during times of conflict. So you're right. In the Cold War, governments were racing against each other, arms race, space race, whatever. And governments have huge cash reserves, yes, so they can throw that into those projects.
Yeah.
Bring the greatest minds together, fine. But if you actually look at what's happened over the last 10 years since the credit crunch and the recession, the fact that, let's say, IPOs are on decline historically, what we're seeing now is that there's actually so much cash and liquidity in the private sector versus public institutions.
Yeah.
And that's what's driving innovation. It may not be as well advertised, right? Because a lot of these companies are privately held, but there's an incredible amount of innovation happening within deep tech. And all you have to do is just have a quick scan of the portfolios of the top VC companies to look at the scope of the problems being solved and the scale of problems being solved, whether it's a decentralized app on the blockchain trying to take on global supply chains, or whether it's deep tech solutions to huge environmental issues around energy resources or ocean plastics or whatever. There has never been more innovation than there is right now, because entrepreneurship is more easy to access and capital.
Let me challenge that. So if you look at in the 1900s, the Wright brothers, I can't remember the exact year, they created the first plane.
Yeah.
Right? So if you were born in 1895, you lived to see the creation of the first plane. And then in the 60 years later, we went to the moon. Now, in the intervening time, there hasn't been any massive leap. I feel like...
Are you kidding me? Artificial intelligence.
No, but come on. This is helping us find better targeted ads on social media.
What?
But,
that's one application of it. I can talk to something
Here's another analogy, a movie analogy. If you watch Back to the Future Part 1, he goes to 1955... and then he goes to 2015. Now, if you look at the 2015 that they imagined, the gap between 1955 and 1985 was massive in terms of cultural and technological shifts. The gap between 1985 and 2015, it's not as much. I feel like we're all looking at our phones. Wow, we're not looking around. We're still riding the same trains for the last 100 years. Subways are...
The same trains. You're telling me a steam engine, you know what I mean. Coal train.
No. What I mean by that is, how old is the underground? This is what I'm talking about. The underground is the infrastructure there.
But there's been DLRs and faster lines.
I feel like we could have more innovation. I feel like there's a lot more incremental innovation. And I don't mean to quote someone that I don't really dislike, but Peter Thiel, his VC firm was called, we wanted flying cars and instead all we got was 140 characters, which is basically saying that we could do more, we can do better. And
I think that's an oversimplification.
It's a catchy tagline. I feel like we could do more as an industry. And I think
do more right now. Tell me what's missing. Tell me your vision.
In my opinion, I think government should be doing, we should be looking at things like Mars. Obviously climate change. I mean,
so you're disappointed that we're not colonizing Mars. Is that what you're saying? It's not about colonizing Mars. That we can colonize the moon and that we can land on the moon.
I mean, we should have space bases in the moon by now.
But
that's
Mars
my opinion.
Rover, we went to Mars. That was years ago, man. You weren't paying attention.
I know we went to Mars, but what I would love to see is, I would love to see us have bases on the moon and be working on a way to get to Mars. I know people are going to make the argument, why are we focusing on this? There's more pressing issues on Earth. I agree 100%. But I feel like those things are important because they make people, dream of a better tomorrow, as corny as that sounds.
All right, so I was listening to Radio 4 Today Show this morning, as I do. And There was a really interesting fellow on there called Tristan Harris. So he is a former product designer for Facebook or Google. One of the big ones.
I think it's Google.
And he is now the founder of the Center for Humane Technology.
Mm.
And he was talking about a movement that he started and supports and, you know, other people jumped onto called Time Well Spent, which is this idea of not letting technology monopolize our time. So acknowledging the fact that technology has been designed in specifically a way to make us addicted to it, hooked to it. I mean, there's even that book Hooked that everyone's so obsessed with.
The Devil's Bible.
And he was talking about the fact that with Apple, you know, announcing that it has a tool to limit screen time and a bunch of other tech companies also stepping into this, the time well spent movement has basically lost its meaning.
Mm.
It's been co-opted by the companies that necessitated its creation in the first place. And, you know, that's pretty messed up. So I think what's important to note in this is the point that he makes around if companies truly cared about the time well spent movement, if companies truly cared about people being more mindful of the amount of time they spend on their phones, reducing that time overall so it doesn't have an impact on their mental health, their relationships, et cetera, and just generally be more aware of how they're spending their time and put their time to good use, they wouldn't just create tools that limit people's time spent on their phone. They would redesign the elements of the phone that cause people to be hooked to it in the first place.
Yeah.
For example,
notifications,
even just red badges, design, whatever.
Infinite scrolling, make it easier for people to
you know, take the color out of their screens and all those sorts of things. So yeah, how does it make you feel knowing that Apple is launching the screen time tool? Does it feel disingenuous to you?
I think each company has responded differently to this kind of backlash. I'll be scrolling through Instagram and it'll be like, you're all caught up now. Like, you don't have to, like, look at anything anymore. And I think that's quite a surface level change that they've implemented because their business model is predicated on you spending enough time in the app so that it's valuable for advertisers to want to target you on. Whereas Apple, it's kind of like their feature change on the iOS 12, I find it more helpful because it will literally give you an alert and say, you said you'd only spend 20 minutes on Twitter. You've been on there for an hour. Like, what's up? So that's more helpful. But the thing about Apple was that their business model was predicated on selling you phones. They don't give a damn how often you use it. As long as you keep buying their phones, like, who the hell cares? So we're asking these companies to, a lot of times, to do things that are just, they're never going to do. Like, in the case of Facebook particularly. I read an interesting article about a dude that had the new iOS 12 in beta. The whole time well spent thing. The new feature they put in. And he noted a study where we check our phones on average 85 times a day and that most half of all smartphone users are glued to their screens at least 5 hours a day. That's almost a third of waking life. How would you match to that? Are you saying, would you be in that 5 hour realm a day?
I used Moment the other day.
Which is what?
So Moment is an app which I recommend if you're curious to know how long you use your phone for. I shared it in my Instagram stories and a few people commented. So it's, I heard about it on the Product Hunt podcast, funnily enough. So you basically download this app called Moment from the App Store. You keep it open on your phone, running in the background, and it will track every time you're looking at your screen. So it doesn't track when you're like actively on a call or anything like that, but just, you know, checking Insta, et cetera, et cetera. So on Monday, I by the time it was 7:40 p.m., so I'd sort of like wrapped up for the day and I was just going to like, you know, cook dinner, like maybe watch some stuff. I'd been on my phone for an hour and 17 minutes.
For the whole day? That's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
That's pretty impressive.
That said, I spend a lot of time on my laptop.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's true.
And I can use most mobile apps on my laptop. So I can use WhatsApp on my laptop, iMessage. Yeah. You and I are on iMessage all the time, all day.
Yeah.
I'll do that on my MacBook. But I mean, I was proud of myself because like for me, I don't feel comfortable with being on my phone. Like honestly, even a little over an hour makes me feel a bit awkward. Makes me feel a bit, awkward.
It's amazing, though, like, these devices that were intended to be phones, how many of us actually use them for that feature? They're probably, like, 1 or 2 minutes of our day maybe on the phone, and the rest of it is just that we
who makes phone calls, though? Like, yeah, I have some friends that are like, oh, I prefer phone calls, but, like, yo, if you haven't scheduled to talk to me, I'll be like, why are you ringing me? Butt dial.
Yeah, exactly. I think as well, like, Gen Z, like, it might be even worse where they, I don't even know if they're even capable of making a phone call. I tried to get my little cousin to phone me one time and she was like, why? I was like, I want to chat to you, man. Catch up. She's like, oh, you know, like, can we just text? I was like, okay. But
voice notes? What about voice notes?
Voice notes, I think people are comfortable with. I don't know what it is. I think are we all just becoming really antisocial? I don't know.
But are we becoming it or haven't we always been? Because this debate frustrates me so much. When people like send out like a tweet or like a social media rant like, oh my God, people like always glued to their phones, blah, blah. I was like, you talk to a stranger then. You just talk to a stranger.
But it's not about talking to a stranger. It's about engaging with the people that are already within your network. I hate to use the word network because none of us used the word network 10 years ago. But within your friends, like your circle of people that you love and your family, like go chat to them instead of looking down.
Well, if you don't want to,
that's the problem.
Like,
we have an alternative
now. We don't
now.
Want to, but like this is
we
the
have
thing.
An alternative
like,
now.
Why are we blaming phones when we should be blaming ourselves? If I really wanted to strike up a convo with you, nothing would stop me. Yeah. But the phone is a convenient excuse for my social anxiety / laziness /
that's the thing though. Like,
you know what I mean?
When was the last time you ever experienced boredom? It's such a rare feeling now. It doesn't
exactly.
ever happen. Like back in the day, if you went
thanks
to like
technology,
if you went to like the dentist back in the day. And like, you know, you had to wait like 20 minutes. You'd have to read the crusty magazines that they had right, right in front of you. Now, obviously, you just pick up the phone and you're entertained
exactly.
throughout the rest of the day. But I feel like boredom is an important sensation. We wouldn't have the feeling of boredom if it wasn't there for a reason. So, for example, like, I have a friend of mine and he would always be texting me while he was at work. And I'd be like, what's up, bro? What's up? Like, you're not enjoying work or anything? He's like, yeah, no, I mean, you know, it's a boring job. And I'm like, well, you having the constant distraction of your phone will probably keep you in that job for a year or two extra than you probably need to be there. Like, it's telling you,
that's
like,
smart.
I need to get the hell out of there. Like, or for example, in a relationship, let's say you're going out for dinner and you see the couple both on their phones, head down, and it's, that phone is distracting you to the point where maybe something isn't really working. If we both don't even want to even talk to each other and even engage each other, we'd rather be looking at Instagram. So I feel like boredom is like,
interesting.
And also like, you know, Einstein probably wouldn't have done the inventions that he had done if he was scrolling through Facebook. I know that sounds really stupid, but bear with me. He was a patent clerk and he had a day job. So Einstein's physics was a side hustle for him. So if he was just like at work, just going for his laptop, just scrolling instead of like daydreaming, you know, like daydreaming and boredom, these are important things. Like he probably wouldn't have like as easily have come up with what he wanted to do. And that's
know.
Why they call it shower thoughts. Why do you have shower thoughts? Because you have nothing else holding you down and your brain's working in the background and something comes up in your head. You're like, okay, cool.
No, that's different though, because shower is also like, it's a bit relaxing, you know, you
it's
have
downtime.
Time for yourself, whatever.
It's downtime.
Yeah, but that's different to waiting. Showering is not the same as waiting.
Yeah.
And I think there's like a different energy. There's a different energy in that. I agree that our minds need stillness. I think we need times to reflect. We need to, you know, meditate, mindfulness. But I don't agree that we need to necessarily be bored. And I also don't even know if I believe in boredom. Because I feel like boring people find things boring. Whereas interesting and curious people can turn what might look like a boring situation at face value into something a bit more valuable. You know what I mean?
I get that, yeah.
So like, your friend sits at work and is like, yo, I'm bored, I'm gonna like text all my friends. Whereas like, if he was a bit more like imaginative, he could be researching other jobs. So on to our ish news. I was so excited to hear. I actually found out through a tweet, Ryan Hoover tweeted, but obviously I wasn't checking the news enough that day. One of my favorite movies from childhood had this bad boy on VHS. Oh, yes. Michael Jordan, Looney Tunes, Bugs Bunny, you name it. Space Jam coming back with a sequel directed by none other than Black Panther director Ryan Coogler.
And it's got LeBron in it.
LeBron!
You know what? Don't shoot me. I've never seen Space Jam.
Oh, my gosh.
I've never seen it. What?
I mean, what? Why?
I think it was, I don't know, I guess it was big in the UK, but, you know, like, I'm not really a basketball head, so it just never really, like...
Michael Jordan was, like, the most famous athlete when I was a kid. Like,
but you grew up in America, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's probably why.
And I was just like, MJ! And when that movie came out, I was just like, this is insane, because it was, like, all my favorite cartoon characters mixed in with real humans. Michael Jordan was there, basketball games... I even remember the soundtrack, man, Space Jam. Every now and then when I'm feeling nostalgic, I'll play it on Spotify.
LeBron's killing it as well, though, isn't he, man? Like, he's done the school thing now, and now he's going into the big screen. Shout
I like when
LeBron.
He wears glasses. I'm like, oh, hey, intellectual LeBron. But yeah, Space Jam 2. We should do a techish screening, man.
But I've never seen Space Jam. That would be so fake.
Obviously, watch Space Jam 1. Oh, okay, what are you talking about? That movie's like 20 years old by now.
Okay, I'll find like...
Maybe even 20... More than
I'll
20 years
it.
Old right now.
We'll be right back. talked about it before, but the whole Facebook dating product, like, that's being launched. Soft launch in Colombia, of all places. They're going to test it out with their 30 million users over there. Now, you know what? The only reason I'm bringing it up is because I feel like the last time we talked about it, I never really thought through the ramifications. And I have a feeling this might be the game changer in the dating scene. I'm not going to lie. I think this might be it. Because nobody knows you better than Facebook. And they're not actually going to do like a swiping Tinder-style product. It's actually going to give you like 5 recommendations every day. And based off the streams of data they've collected over you, I've had a profile for 10 years. They're going to recommend their best people. It's going to be people that have clicked on the same articles that you've liked, have watched the same viral cat video that you've seen, that have been to the same locations that you have been, that have, you know, same behavior patterns, that have, you know, same taste in music, the same like, they have so much data on you that it is possible that one day you're going to be like, you know, I'm not even happy in my relationship. Let me see who Facebook recommended for me right now. And you're going to be like, yo, this is a better match. Whoa. This is a better match. Like, it's insane. Like, Tinder never had any of that kind of data on you. OkCupid doesn't. I mean, with OkCupid and all these other services, you have to upload your data and tell them what you like. Facebook already knows you. So over the next 5 to 10 years, I can't see this not being the pinnacle dating app. I was like, I want to sign up now.
Like, more like the exact opposite.
I find it freaky, the fact that it's, there's so much.
No, I just think it's, can you make assumptions about how relationships match? I mean, I'm thinking of my partner. We've been together for 7 years. Woo! And
anniversary.
There will be very little that aligns in our Facebook profiles.
You think so?
I mean, other than our age, and possibly maybe like music festivals and like club nights that we've been to. But our taste in music's actually quite different. Like, sometimes I walk home and I'm like, what are you listening to? And we're also into like different sports. And like, I've traveled to loads of places. And like, he's like only been to like places where you can ski. I don't know. Like, no, but like, seriously, I think most people are like, I think we all have similarities, but like actually like quite a superficial level. And we're drawn to people really that share our values. And those are not necessarily demonstrated externally.
I think you guys share more in common than A, you realize, and B, a lot of it will be down to your psychological profile as opposed to just the obvious, like, oh, you both like this thing. It will be like, they will be able to make a psychological profile of you, somebody who is, you know, left-wing, progressive, yada, yada, yada. I mean, look at what Cambridge Analytica was able to do. They were able to map profiles to the big 5 personality types and then show them the right kind of political ads and spike interest in them, right?
But they also, like, targeted the most susceptible people, and also the influence of their work could feasibly be overstated. I'm not saying that they didn't play a role, but they were ultimately like one variable in a multitude of variables.
Oh yeah, I'm not saying they swung the election. But right. I think there was obviously some effectiveness there, otherwise we wouldn't be having the fallout that we're having now. And the whole question of, you know, who's susceptible and who's not. I mean, let's not, sometimes the most intelligent people are the most susceptible, because you think, yeah, you can't get me. So, you know, we have to be careful there. I think this is something that can work on most of us.
Like, on the one hand, I'm like, oh, wow, the potential is, like, huge. But on the other hand, I'm also like, but it could also just, like, bomb so badly. Because some of the assumptions are so basic. Like, oh, someone who liked the same viral video as you. It's like, oh, that's, like, base level.
But that's all they could think of right now.
Similarities.
But you got to remember, like,
you like the video of the cat licking ice cream, too?
What's
Facebook's
business model? They get advertisers target you based on, you know, the specifications that they outline, and advertisers wouldn't pour all their money in if it wasn't effective.
I'm not saying it's not effective. So,
yeah, so that's what I'm saying. So, like, we can't just say, like, oh, like, things that I've liked, like, it's not, you know, I think you're right in the sense that this initial version might be a bit of a damp squib, but just thinking 5-10 years into the future, if the company is able to maintain, you know, itself at this level, I feel like it's going to get pretty freaky and pretty scary real soon. I think you're going to be able to go in there and they're going to be like, this thing knows me better than my mum does. And yeah, I'm not gonna lie, some of these matches are looking better than what I got right now.
Jesus.
I'm joking. But like, you might think
interesting,
that.
Interesting, interesting, interesting. I'm now starting to think, like, how much of our lives do we want to be calculated?
In what sense?
How much, to what extent are we comforted by the idea of someone matching us to our quotation marks, perfect partner, based on, you know, 10 years worth of behavior that both I and this potential person have had, you know, it's like that Black Mirror episode, you know, where there's like two people, like a couple are like playing out in a thousands and thousands of scenarios.
I ain't seen it, but go on.
All right. Well, spoiler alert. At the end of the episode, you realize that they're actually just like an algorithm.
Okay.
So they thought they were real, but really they're a simulation.
Wow.
So, you know, that Black Mirror episode is basically what Facebook is doing right now.
Yeah.
So they ran all these different characters across all these different scenarios based on the information they had available. And at the very end, they're like, oh, okay, cool. Yeah, this is a good match. Go with that.
Mm.
And I guess like what I'm trying to say is like, I'm thinking of things like, let's say, Brené Brown's talk on vulnerability and this idea of like being authentic and acknowledging that, you know, we sometimes make mistakes and we don't always make the right choices, but we're willing to take the choices that feel right at the time because, you know, that's the best that we can hope for and we'll just see what happens down the line. And I guess what I'm wondering is, I go on Facebook and it presents someone to me and I'm like, oh, that's interesting because I wouldn't have expected myself to be interested in someone with this profile, right, whatever it might be, right?
And wouldn't you be curious to find out? Let me go on a date with this person and actually let me see. Let me just see. And you've got to remember, this is in the backdrop, but 1 in 3 new marriages, I've got the stat, it's from people who are online.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah, 1 in 3 met each other online. But so we're in that backdrop.
Mm.
I think Facebook will be able to offer a superior product. Like, I don't think it's unquestionable.
Interesting.
It's unquestionable, like, yeah. I think it's going to be a big product for them. I think they're going to, once they start monetizing
it. Is it free?
Right now it's free. They're starting off in Colombia and then they're going to roll out to the rest of the world.
Something about it just doesn't feel good to me. I don't know why.
That's how everything starts off though. Like if I said to you, like, put your real details and profiles on the internet like 12, 15 years ago, you would have been like, that feels icky.
I was already doing that.
I mean, most of us were on MySpace with fake, you know, thing, trying to be rappers and shit. Like
12 years ago, it was Facebook, yo.
Facebook was 2004, right?
Getting old. Yeah, but when we got on it, I got on Facebook in 2006. That's yeah, same. 12 years ago.
Yeah, same, right. So that was crazy, like, to put your real name and your real picture and everything. And going back before then, putting your credit card on the internet was crazy. So, and people already do online dating. I think it's going to be it's a big winner. But we'll see. Yo, I don't know if you've seen... Do you watch Atlanta?
Of course I do.
Yeah, so...
Come on, man. That's insulting.
So who do you think that was as Teddy Perkins?
My two favourite shows, Atlanta, Insecure.
And this is a story that's relating to Issa Rae and Donald Glover. What? So basically, Issa Rae is chatting to Teddy Perkins. He was a character from the show episode Teddy Perkins in Atlanta. And it's like a Michael Jackson type character. Like,
sorry, I'm just like laughing remembering that episode. The episode's so weird. Freaky. I was scared.
Yeah, that was so freaky. Like,
yeah.
And... yeah, shout out to them. They should have won an Emmy for that episode. I don't know how the hell they did. That's some bullshit.
Man.
Like that was a masterpiece of an episode. And
awards are such BS in general. I'm not just saying that because I haven't won any, but also because, like...
I'll give you an award.
So many good things don't win awards. Like some of like the things I love the most in the world, I've never won anything. Maybe I'm just
so arbitrary. That's why it's BS. Like,
but I also feel like because they're kind of like they're not real tastemakers. Like, is the Oscars a tastemaker?
Yeah, it's not.
No, it's just like so much of these things are just like reinforcing existing ideas, and like, you know, we're avant-garde, we're pioneers, we're like forward-facing, and people like us, like we're spotting the trends and what's cool before everyone else catches on to it. We have to be open-minded, and you have to be willing to challenge conventions. And I think when you do that, like Atlanta. People just don't get it, and then they don't see value in it.
But to be fair, Atlanta has won. I think last year, in the season one, they won a few Emmys, right?
So I mean, season two is super, like, non-linear and, like, right. Whatever.
There's a lot
and
of, like, standalone episodes as well, like Teddy Perkins.
Mm.
But so basically, Teddy Perkins, the character from the episode, who was played by Donald Glover, so we all thought, attended the damn award show. And everyone was like, right, that must be Donald Glover. And Issa Rae was talking to Teddy Perkins, thinking that she was talking to Donald. And then there was a picture... of Donald Glover and Issa and Teddy Perkins standing right next to each other with a bemused Issa Rae in the background thinking, "Rah, I thought I was talking to Donald the whole damn time." So I guess the question is, who's your money on that? Who was it? Who do you think it was?
Oh, man.
It must have just been an
actor. It could have been one of the Jacksons, maybe. No? I don't know. It did look so much like him that I got confused. I was like, is that him? How is that him? Maybe he cloned himself. Maybe Teddy Perkins is real.
I think they just... Yeah, maybe. Or maybe it wasn't Donald in the show. Or maybe they just paid somebody to go do it. I think that's probably the most likely one.
Oh, so it wasn't Donald. Yeah.
It wasn't Donald. Are you not listening to me?
No, in the show. You're saying it wasn't Donald in the show?
I don't
show?
Know. I think it was. I mean, I don't think it was ever confirmed.
Wow.
But it sounded like him.
It did. To be fair, though, with all that heavy prosthetic, it could be
anyone.
Can't tell.
Yeah.
Shout out Teddy Perkins. So I saw a cool album product hunt this week called Boycott, like boycott, but with buy in it. And the premise is vote with your wallet. Over a million people are taking action every day. You sign up with Facebook and you can basically join campaigns to get behind causes that you care about. As you're shopping, you can scan the barcode. And basically what it means is you can ensure that every time you're purchasing something, you're not supporting or rather contributing cash towards a cause you don't, you know, support. So for example, right. you might find out that the CEO of that company or the board member of this company of, like, you know, the tinned peaches you're buying is actually president of the NRA or whatever. So the reason I like this is because we talk a lot about on this show in particular about how capitalism doesn't necessarily like optimize for the issues that are close to our hearts as individuals.
Yeah.
And what's cool is that there's now like a way that you can kind of bend capitalism towards your favor. You know, it's not going anywhere, but you can think about where your money's going and you can be more mindful about that. I was just curious to hear from the listeners, the community. Has anyone had any experiences of using Boycott? Like, have you heard about it? Is it helpful? Is it useful? I think it started in America. But it would be awesome to have something like that or some version of that everywhere where people shop.
So I was using something similar called, I think it's called Done Good. And it was like a Google Chrome plugin that as you browse the internet, it would tell you, like, if I was on Amazon, for example, trying to buy something, it would be like, here are ethical alternatives.
Wow, that's cool.
Yeah, so check that out. Done Good. I'll put that in the show notes. It was really awesome. Yeah,
Why Chrome did you plugin. Stop using it?
That's a good point, you know. I think I just stopped using it because I was like, bro, let me shop at Amazon in peace. Like, I was like, let me just, man. I was like, can I just shop in Amazon, like, in peace kind of thing? And that's just down to my out-and-out hypocrisy, keeping it 100. But the funny thing is, actually, I was looking at Boycott and I was like, I read their T's and C's at the bottom and it was like, we are like an Amazon affiliate partner. So I'm guessing that when you scan a barcode, for example, and say, you know, this is funded by a homophobe or a racist or whatever, right? It will say, these are the alternatives. But all the alternatives are Amazon. They make a lot of their money through Amazon affiliate links, which is how a lot of people make their money. There's no shame in that. But if you're aligning yourself with Amazon, how can you say that you're an ethical alternative?
That makes any sense. You saying Amazon's unethical?
I mean, we talk about this on the show all the time about working labor practices that they have. A lot of people are concerned. I'm not saying out and out Amazon's an unethical company, but a lot of people have concerns and we've voiced those concerns ourselves, right? I admire, you know, the ethos behind the brand. I think we do need ways of being able to coalesce around a movement and say, okay, if we're boycotting, you know, NRA products or we're boycotting products that, you know, are backed by P&G or the Koch brothers or Trump, we do need things. You know, it's very, to be honest, and also it's very hard in capitalism to escape capitalism, if you see what I mean. It's very hard.
Well, you can't.
Not escape capitalism, what I mean. It's very hard in capitalism to be completely ethical at all times. Do you see what I mean? Mm. I remember hearing about how this professor would ask his students, like, what should we do about, you know, oil companies, for example, right? Who should we boycott? And then he basically broke down to them and was like, well, who are the biggest investors in these companies? It's pension funds. Who owns pensions? Your grandparents. Will your grandparents give you $10, probably like little pocket money change, right, based on that pension fund? So you need to boycott yourself. And it was like, it's so hard. Like, we're so entrenched in the system. No, it's, trust me, we are all embedded in this thing. The best thing you can do is probably just get in a tree and hide. Like, because whatever you're doing, somebody's dying or getting screwed over by your implicit, you know, consent. So I just want to do a quick shout out to Alexis Ohanian, one of the co-founders of Reddit, and actually now probably more famously known as Serena Williams' husband. I saw a funny video he put on his IG where he was walking through like New York and a couple of black women in the car were like, yes, like, shout out to Serena. And he was like, I always used to get stopped by people like pitching their startup to me. But now it's like everyone just gives a damn about Serena. And I was like, bow down, man. Acknowledge your place. Like, he says he doesn't mind it anymore. He says he actually likes being second fiddle. Like, so shout out to him. But anyway, I wanted to shout him out because I read a really cool article in Wired where I think they had this thing where prominent people can kind of nominate who they see as like their future icons, essentially.
Nice.
And he shouted out Jewel Burke, I think that's how you say her surname, who's a young black woman who in the States had a company acquired by Amazon. And I like the fact that he's just like, you know, passing the torch and using his platform to promote underrepresented or underestimated voices.
Nice.
And everybody check out Jewel Burke as well. She's sick. So her company was called Partpick. And essentially, she is not even technical, actually. She actually partnered with PhDs and hustled to make it happen. A product that can take a picture of a spare part, some any random nuts and bolt, based off computer vision. It could tell you what that product is, where you can get the replacement, and in one button basically purchase it. So amazing. Rightfully, Amazon was like, yo, we got to snap this up. Yeah, we're on it, right? And I think it's been integrated into Amazon. So yeah, that's a quick shout out.
So that brings episode 25 of Techish to a close.
Woo.
Quarter of a century episode. Thanks for listening with us. Don't forget to subscribe and share if you enjoyed. We also always love to hear from you on social media. You can use the hashtag Techish to let us know what you thought about today's episode. If you want to hang out with us in real life, you can also come to North Star, which is Black and Brown Founders' annual tech conference taking place the first weekend of October in Philadelphia. We'll be there with all of our favorite people in tech, like Arlen Hamilton of Backstage Capital and Ania Williams, one of the organizers, to name but a few of the incredible people who will be there. So many more amazing people. So get your tickets if you haven't already and join us. And don't know if you know, but we do have a Patreon. So why don't you check that out? Techish, support us, pledge your support. And yeah, like, what would you like to hear in future episodes? Do you have ideas for stories we should cover? Is there anything we can give you advice on? We're here for you. This is why we do it.
We love you guys.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, thanks again for listening.